Welcome to the Center for Internet Security's podcast, Cybersecurity Where You Are. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we are at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or even running a state or local government. Join CIS's Sean Atkinson and Tony Sager as they discuss trends and threats, ways to implement controls and infrastructure, explore best practices, and interview experts in the industry. We are here to bring clarity to these complex issues to bring confidence in the connected world.
Hello and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security, joined by Ryan Davis and Tim Davis. Tim, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Sean. How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you. Ryan, how are you?
I'm great. Happy to be here.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, we're talking about a publication, a white paper that you'd both put together with respect to threat actors utilizing generative AI as part of their arsenal, part of their tactics, their techniques. Want to dive into that a little bit deeper, but Ryan, why was that important that we start to put and publish these types of activities, these actions that are being taken with generative AI?
I think it's really important because I feel like a lot of times when we're looking at publications and news reports about, you know, threat actors using this in the wild, it's very abstract and kind of talking about this is something that they could do. And so, you know, making a white paper like this and, you know, actually showing screenshots of the research, it takes away kind of that abstract part of it and makes it more real for our members of the MS and EI ISOC that we're sending these publications to, and really showcases, you know, this is a real capability that we need to be aware of.
Oh, 100%, 100%. So Tim, we know that generative AI is part of the arsenal, right? And I think the awareness Ryan mentioned, very, very important. But how are you starting to see that generative AI is now being used in the attack methodology?
So really what we're seeing is that the cyber threat actors are kind of doing the same thing that we're all doing on this side. We're trying to figure out how to use it. We're trying to figure out where it actually plays a role in our day-to-day life. And the cyber threat actors are doing the same thing. You know, they're experimenting with it. We have seen from multiple groups from multiple countries around the world, from China to Iran, that they're trying to figure out how they can use this, whether it's, you know, removing code from bits of malware that aren't working, or testing out new generative AI memes to kind of take a hammer to some of those divisions within society in sort of these malign influence campaigns. They're really trying to figure this out. And, you know, right now, what we're seeing is that they don't have a specific thing that seems to be working 100% of the time. But the point here is that they're trying. They're still experimenting with it. And as new developments in this field continue to happen, you know, seems almost like on a daily basis at this point, we can be sure that they're going to try to continue to use these tools.
Well, absolutely. I think it's where we see advantage, so do they, right? I mean, ultimately, when we see any new technical capability being employed, being deployed, being utilized, it's I think there's both sides of the coin in a lot of cases. There's the good, there's the bad, right? And we're ourselves, as you mentioned, Tim, utilizing those types of techniques, the capabilities, I think, in a wider aspect. I know generative AI very much, you know, obviously in the mass media, right, that the large language models and everything that can be computed and are really understood from that type of technology. But now, when we look at the application of generative AI, Ryan, is what type of attacks are utilizing it that you see basically through your lens? And do we see that the utility of Gen AI is actually escalating? So it's now more relied upon, as it were, from that type of perspective?
I would say there's three big ones right now, and that would be phishing, malware and malware development, and foreign malign influence. But I wouldn't say that Gen AI is being relied upon for any of those. Like Tim said, you know, it's kind of an exploratory phase right now. As we're figuring it out, so are the cyber threat actors. So they're starting to integrate it kind of into those types of operations, but it's not like the foundation of their operations yet or anything like that. It's just kind of, it's an extension of what we're seeing in the threat landscape, but not an entirely new threat in and of itself.
Understood. That's good. So I think it's more of less a capability, more of an enabler in some cases in that space. And, you know, one of the things I just reflect on some of the statistics coming out of the report, you know, a 1,265% increase in phishing between certain periods of time, you know, Q4 of 2022, I think November 2022, really the mass release of ChatGTP up until, I think that statistic was Q3 of 2023. I mean, that's a huge increase, Ryan, when we see that. So it's more of an enabler, not necessarily a capability. We still need, you know, to the attackers utilizing the phishing methodology, but fundamentally not changed, just enhanced with JI. Is that fair to say?
I would say that's fair to say, yes.
Wonderful. It leads us around certain elements of we're now looking then that the technology has been released, and now ultimately there is the nature, Tim, when we look at the prevalence of such tools. Any high-profile incidents of note that you would use as kind of the baseline of this is the type of attacks being utilized, this is how an enhanced attack with generative AI is being used?
So the first one that immediately comes to mind happened earlier this year, and that was in January during the New Hampshire primaries. There was a robocall that was impersonating the President of the United States, President Biden. And to me, that was, you know, that was a huge moment, because you had a generative AI tool being used to actually impersonate the President of the United States in a fairly well put together campaign to make it believable. Now, you know, this was one where it did quickly come to light that this was not the President of the United States who was making this odd robocall, you know, telling people don't go out and vote, wait till November to vote. Little weird message to receive from the President of the United States. But to me, you know, that was a huge moment where you saw just how easy this technology could be used for something as massive as the President's own voice. And then you zoom out a little more onto a more international scale. There were elections in Slovakia in December, and there was a voice clone that went viral on social media of a candidate who was talking about rigging the election. Now, obviously, it was debunked, and that candidate ended up losing. It's really unknown if that voice clone played a role in this or not. But I sort of want to pause for a second for the audience to just think about marrying these two together. You have internationally, we're seeing this being used in elections. And then you focus domestically, you already have somebody who breached that line, who already has impersonated the President of the United States. So where does this go in the future? You know, we have, you know, there are conflicts going on throughout the entire world. The President plays critical roles in the day-to-day functions of this country. How far away are we from the point where somebody hijacks a TV feed with a fake broadcast from the President of the United States, or a fake voice of the President of the United States announcing something slightly more serious than don't go vote in the primaries? But I think also a point here, too, is that those are two big ones. And thankfully, you know, they're limited. We haven't seen one that I would call, you know, truly catastrophic yet. But we know that the threat actors out there, they're trying. There are reports getting released all the time about how they're still attempting to use these. There was a report from OpenAI about how they disrupted some adversaries that were attempting to exploit their technology for malicious purposes. Now, a point they made was that these threat actors, their campaign hadn't gotten very far. But, you know, it only takes them getting it right once to really have that devastating impact from a campaign with this. So, you know, while we haven't had a super huge incident yet that's really, you know, shaken the country to its core, it is something we all need to be mindful of and pay attention to these other incidents as they occur.
No, absolutely. And I think this year in note, as it were, Tim, obviously from the threat perspective, you know, you see opportunities at least for such capabilities, and obviously presidential and other elements in that space. It leads us to think that, you know, we've got to really understand this vector of attack, and the fact, you know, with some of the statistics that we, you know, just reviewed, as it were, as part of the report that you put together, kind of seems, you know, we're enabling a capability, but also enabling an approach, as it were, that the expectation is that this is going to be enhanced and utilized a lot more frequently, especially coming up to November. It's going to be a very interesting time in this space. And so really the question ultimately in this area is, as we see those types of attacks and techniques being used, Ryan, from the phishing perspective, has this just changed the game in terms of what we used to, you know, what I would train on maybe 5 years ago is the structure of sentences, spelling and things of that nature? Are we considering that over in the Gen AI age?
I would say, you know, traditional phishing emails, you know, kind of like you mentioned, the hallmarks are spelling errors and grammatical errors. And, you know, generative AI takes that away. So I wouldn't say that, you know, we're seeing an end to that traditional phishing email right now by any means. But I do think that we're going to start seeing those Gen AI created phishing emails more and more. And in addition to that, you know, with the research that we did as part of this white paper, we found that all three of the popular platforms that we tested readily performed impersonations, included placeholders labeled in brackets for malicious links and documents. Some of them even typo-squatted the emails of legitimate election officials. And those were all things that we didn't necessarily explicitly ask for. And so it's providing all these extra kind of deceptive elements on its own. In addition to that, too, I mean, we didn't really specifically ask for particular storylines for these platforms to come up with. The one thing we would maybe ask is, could you write a phishing email from one elections official to another, asking them to open a malicious document or click on a malicious link? But these platforms came up with the storylines on their own. So now, I mean, with that, the CTAs don't even need to come up with a storyline. And these platforms can come up with a believable storyline for what one elections official might say to another and provide that. And that's a really attractive opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it creates a campaign as a service in some cases. It's leading us to a capability where the inference is being made. And, you know, you look and wonder the training mechanisms of the large language model. And asking, like you say, a kind of a simplistic question, and it's filling in the gaps, reading between the lines is, oh, well, my expectation is that you're looking to create this, and why don't we just do that now to save time? Very, very interesting approach. Again, good for when we're thinking about how we utilize it as from the ethical perspective. But then when you apply these overlays and even the bypasses, Ryan, from the ethical engines that are built in, I think in some cases, and again, I want to refer this back to you, but it seems that those can be bypassed with the structure of the question that you ask can actually give you representatively something that may not be within an ethical alignment that we would expect. Is that right?
I would definitely say so. I mean, one of the most common ones that I've seen, one through, you know, our own research here, but also through doing other open source research, was like a pretending strategy where you get the chatbot to adopt some sort of persona. So you're changing the background or context of the conversation, but you're maintaining the same intention. That's pretty common. And, you know, I want to note here as well that there are entire communities on legitimate forums dedicated to coming up with these this sort of prompt engineering. You know, Reddit has a ton of them, and that's a completely legitimate social media site. So it's not something that's necessarily that difficult to do. And I think that's kind of one of the big concerns is, you know, how easy it is to get around these filters and these safeguards that are in place.
Absolutely. Kind of, you know, in the vernacular, kind of the new set of Google Docs, as it were, is now these prompt engineering type capabilities that we can utilize, one, to you know, representatively pull information out. It's just as a vignette was at RSA, and one of the speakers had said, you know, we bypass by saying, my grandmother used to tell me a story about malware creation, and, you know, tell me a story in that vein with these particular criteria, and ultimately, you know, was successful in that space. And it's very interesting in terms of then what are, you know, we look at that. So from the report's perspective, looked at a few tests of a different set of large language models. So I think OpenAI, Gemini, Copilot, I believe were the three at least as part of this. You know, I think in some cases, then it's the responsibility of looking, you know, through these particular forums as other ways we can structure and manage particular prompt engineering to then reverse engineering the prompts in terms of determining if there is, you know, an ethical issue at hand. Have you seen much research in that space at this point in time, or a little bit too new and we're still trying to build out a capability, Ryan?
I haven't seen a ton in that area. I would say it is still kind of a new area that we're trying to figure out. And I think that kind of goes along a bit with what we were saying earlier, where it's kind of a race right now, the defenders against the attackers, and we're still kind of trying to see who's going to win.
Yes. The new defenders dilemma, right? It is seeing what comes out of this space. And again, you know, it also, Tim, leads me into kind of a similar question with phishing is social engineering. I think you provided a great example with voice cloning as a capability in this space. How is social engineering changing with the addition of generative AI in your perspective?
So really, there's two points on this, and you know, one you touched upon with the voice cloning, you know, impersonating individuals for things like phone calls. For scams, you know, that now takes it to the absolute next level where you could convincingly impersonate the CEO of a major company. You know, Sean, I could impersonate you and call Sean and have Sean talk to Sean. You know, with phishing, as we were just talking about, really what we saw here in the research in this paper was how some of these models could pull information from websites for organizations and give you that information. You didn't even have to go there. All you had to do was ask it. Now, in some cases, the information was outdated or wrong, which may have been due to limitations using, you know, the free versions of some of these models. But to me, one of the ones that really stood out in this paper was the prompt where we asked it to make it sound, you know, a convincing sort of analogy from the location we were trying to impersonate, make it seem like we're actually living there. And what it did was it made a joke about traffic on a local highway. We went ahead and looked up the local highway, and it was in fact there. And it, you know, if you stop and think about this for a second, that is sort of one of the great unifiers of this country, is no matter where you live, there is that one road, or, you know, for those of you in the Albany area, maybe three roads, that you can think about. That there's always an issue. There's always delays on them in the morning. There's delays on them in the afternoon. There's construction year round. It's that sort of thing that if somebody comes to you and makes a joke about that local highway, you're automatically thinking they're probably local. Maybe, you know, they're just familiar with your area, but it adds that special level of personalization that's really hard to get otherwise. And that was one that when we got the prompt to do that, that was a bit of an eye opener, just seeing how, you know, you can have an email making a joke about a local highway that, you know, those of us on the other end who were crafting the prompt had to go look it up because we don't know very much about highways in other states. But, you know, that's a huge one right there, because it's building that trust. You know, when we talk about what threat actors are trying to do, they're trying to get you to trust them in a sense with these phishing emails, trust them to open a document or click a link. And they don't want you thinking about it too much, because, you know, if you're thinking, they're losing. And so when they're building that trust with analogies like local highways, that really takes these to the next level. And that's one of the more concerning things that we can see about these, is just all that information that they have and have access to throughout the entire internet. And they're able to pull out some of those specific bits and create that sort of convincing email that can lower your defenses and make you engage with it.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's you're kind of retuning some open source intelligence, right? And allowing that to then permeate the narrative, reduce those barriers, like you said. Just, I don't want you thinking, I want you clicking, yep. right? And in a lot of cases, that is adding that touch. So for us, I'll mention at least one that I think, Tim, in your mind is the Twin Bridges, right? You mentioned that. You're local, right? You've faced those issues of an evening or of a morning. And so it leads then into kind of the other social engineering perspective, Tim, I wanted to get your thoughts on was, you know, the technology that we've seen with deepfakes. It seems like we're now not only voice, audio, visual. If I'm correct, Tim, and please, and yourself and Ryan, keep me online here, but I believe there was a deepfake either from a bank, financial institution that basically it represented a person who was able to get an organization through basically teleconferencing to wire a certain amount of funds through the utility of a deepfake. Now, let me clarify, make sure I didn't mishear that particular social engineering capability. And with that advancement, a lot that we start need to think about from a defense perspective. But let me clarify that with you both and make sure that was an actual attack.
Yeah, I'm not personally familiar with that one. Okay. But I think more broadly, you know, to your point there, that is the next step that we're seeing, you know, combine that audio and that video. There was a report released about how some Iranian actors actually hijacked TV stations and broadcast a fake persona to broadcast fake casualty information about the ongoing Israel-Hamas conflict. So you see sort of that intersection of inaccurate information combined with hijacking a TV station, combined with generative AI, to create this sort of more holistic approach to spreading this information. And to me, that's really the scary part about where we could see this going. And it also, you know, some of those images and videos that we can see broadcast, they're again, they're playing on emotions. And unfortunately, that's what we see some of these actors do, is they want to play on our emotions. There was an image that was broadcast on social media early last year, I believe it was March of 2023. And it was an image that supposedly showed an explosion at the Pentagon. Now, for a lot of us in this country, just the words explosion at the Pentagon brings us back to one of the darkest days in this country's history. And that's why an image like that can spread like wildfire. Even the stock market briefly dipped because of that image. And then earlier this year, there was a video of the Eiffel Tower in flames that generated millions of views on social media before it was, you know, realized that it was a fake. But you see these that are being created specifically to play on the emotions and the worst fears of people. And you know, those are the sorts of people that we're talking about here when we talk about using these things for ill, is recreating horrible days or horrible tragedies for the sole purpose of manipulating people's emotions, getting things to gain traction, impact real things like the stock market. That's really what we're seeing here. And that's some of the dark stuff, really, unfortunately, that we really as defenders have to keep an eye on.
Oh, absolutely. I think in some cases, it's also the velocity in which that data spreads as well. Never been quicker, you know, with the social networks, as it were, in order to permeate that particular misinformation, as it were.
I think it's also a little bit of a double-edged sword. There was a New York Times investigation following the use of AI after the October 7 Hamas attack, where they found that AI was used less frequently than initially anticipated to spread that kind of content across social media networks and online. And they found that there's the possibility of AI-generated content being circulated, leading people to label genuine images, video, and audio as inauthentic. So, you know, for malicious actors kind of trying to manipulate the information environment, that's also an attractive thing to take advantage of as well.
No, absolutely. I mean, it leads us then down the path from the report itself, some of the recommendations. Ultimately, from a defender's perspective, you know, these types of capabilities we're seeing proliferate. And I think, Ryan, that's interesting statistics in terms of it's not as much as we thought. And then it's, you know, one of my expectations, again, just being risk averse, as it were, is a deluge for this year, you know, coming up from an elections perspective and even the Olympics and things of that nature in 2024, is that there is this need, I think, and want to get your thoughts as we wind up the episode, in terms of what then can the defender do? And I think it's being necessarily apprehensive, understanding, you know, all of the research that the team has done here, but then also integrating that. And I love one of the ones here into both social engineering and phishing training is to incorporate those latest findings and the trends, right? So obviously your report is going to be part of that now internally. That's awesome. Thank you. But I think here is that this now becomes kind of the tip of the iceberg when we're looking at cyber threat intelligence. I think there's a generative AI component or even a subsection to what we're seeing now. What are your thoughts in that space, Ryan?
I think that there definitely is a subsection of it that we need to be really making sure that we're aware of, and especially to like integrating into trainings and our knowledge of it, like you said. So for like phishing trainings and awareness, for example, including some AI generated phishing emails. When it comes to defense, though, again, it's kind of being used as an enhancer. And so a lot of those methods of defense that you commonly use and focusing on that defense in depth, what you're going to want to do is continue to do that, continue to strengthen those. An AI-generated phishing email is still a phishing email. So I think it's important to, you know, really focus on that side of it as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. No, I think, again, the work that has been done so far, again, I think is, it's great. Again, congratulations on the work and the need and getting this out. I think I needed, it in just my role from the organization's perspective, a direction. A kind of set the tone of what I'm seeing. You know, in some cases, again, not to be that guy, but I could, you know, look online. That's why I was asking for verification of the deepfake, because potentially that was fake in terms of then, you know, looking in different directions at different attack vectors. You know, where are we starting now to provide the confidence, I think, in what we're seeing, what we're reading? Because before this, I mean, just in my positions, and I can only imagine from threat intel experts like yourself, the deluge of information that you have to be aware of on a daily basis is not getting any smaller. Now you add a new component that's creating a new velocity on top of that, plus it could be injecting, you know, let's say poisoning the well of this intelligence as well. It's daunting. Tim, what do you think? And how do you kind of keep up with everything that you're seeing?
No, I think you phrased it really well with the word daunting there. But, you know, I think it's something where it's learning to distill out the really important developments and the really important incidents. You know, yes, we can talk through the statistics about increases in phishing and all of that, but, you know, phishing is something we've seen for a long time. And as you're thinking, you know, from the defender standpoint, should be, you know, you shouldn't only focus on how do I stop the phishing emails, because even before generative AI, the phishing emails got through. So it's important to figure out how are you layering your defenses to ensure if they get through your initial door, do you have a couple more doors on your network that you can stop them, or at a minimum, know when they're there and be able to kick them out of your house? And I think in terms of the developments of this, you know, it's absolutely a field that's going to continue to grow. We are seeing it every single day. We saw it just yesterday. Apple had their WWDC keynote, and you saw that they're now putting generative AI in phones. You've got a partnership with OpenAI so that Siri can now talk with ChatGPT, and you know, you've got this convergence of the chatbots on your phone. And so that's a huge development that is going to push this forward, regardless of how we may personally feel about it. This technology is here, and it is here to stay. You know, you cannot put generative AI back in the box. And I think it's up to us as defenders and as cybersecurity practitioners to be on the leading edge of this, which is what this paper is trying to do, is explore how to use it, how the threat actors are using it, and what can be done about it. Because we always need to stay one step ahead. And right now, you know, sitting here on this podcast with you all, none of us know what it's going to look like in 10 years. You know, when they released the iPhone many years ago, none of us could have predicted what it looks like today. And none of us can predict what generative AI is going to look like in the future. So it's important to distill down the important updates, the ones that really are game changers, the really important incidents like what we were highlighting, and take those and figure out how we can strengthen our own defenses to keep everybody as secure as possible.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, Ryan, Tim, thank you so much. Again, great work. We're going to have you back because, like you say, the velocity, probably in 3 months, we'll have more conversations to have in this space. But again, congratulations on the work. Really well done. Thank you so much. It was great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Thank you. And with that, thank you very much to our audience. Remember to subscribe in all the usual ways. Any questions, comments, concerns, reach out to us at podcasts@cisecurity.org. And with that, we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the show today. The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS. If you're interested in learning more about how to grow your cybersecurity program, the free tools available to help you on your journey, or to get involved with the CIS volunteer community, visit our website, cisecurity.org. Start secure and stay secure.